Well, years ago, my father divorced my mother for another woman. And although it was 1972, the consequences are still being felt 50 years later. He died in 1997, and yet the effect of that decision is here with us today. In 1986, I was looking for an engineering work, slightly specialised. The recruitment agency made some suggestions. It could have been Ford at Dagenham, or somewhere in Wales, or Rolls-Royce at Crewe, or somewhere on the south coast. But I took the job at Longbridge, in Rover Group as it was then. I started work there in September of that year, and as they say, the rest is history. Baptised here, mortgage in a house at the top of the hill, and years later, Vanessa is proud of the city which she was born and bred. You see, decisions made have their mark, don't they, years and years later. And I'm working at Birmingham City Mission. Decisions have a very long tail. They leave their mark. The consequences of choices made far back in the past still linger on. We are constantly making decisions. Think of any decisions that have stood out for you, or perhaps you're going through something at the moment. The devil will always try and say, nothing bad will come from it, carry on. And the result is we often make decisions lightly, or we're bounced into it by others, or we make a rash, ill-considered move, or decide on the spur of the moment, and later we regret it. How much of what we do is not thought through, never alone prayed about? Lord, is this wise? Is this in line with your will? We don't do that. The result is regret and a trail of damage. So how good are you at making choices, making decisions? As I say, maybe you're in the middle of one at the moment. Where will it leave you in a year's time? Have you looked ahead? Have you thought and prayed about it? Have you sought the counsel of others? Or are you impetuous like Peter, rush into it? Like the man who quickly built his house on sand, wasn't looking ahead, took the easy route. And that's the problem, isn't it, you see? We're going to be thinking about two people, two choices, two consequences. Two people, two choices, two consequences in this passage here this morning, Genesis 13. Interesting to ask the question, did their choice stem from the kind of person they were, or did their choices make the kind of people they became? Maybe the answer is both. The die is cast very early in life. Character is formed early. A repeated no to the promptings of conscience, always taking the easy option, not controlling the tendency to be selfish, closing off the needs of others or to helping others, all set the bearings onto a path which is going to be very hard for many to turn back on, if not impossible. Well, we have two people here. We have Abraham, and he was called by the Lord. Just turn over the previous chapter there, chapter 12, we are introduced to Abraham, and he's called, he's set apart, and you wonder why. Well, if you look at chapter 17, he was set apart to walk before me and be blameless, says God Almighty. So there's Abraham, set apart from God. And then there's his nephew, Lot. Lot had allowed self to dominate. Although he knew the Lord's grace in his life, he so resisted him that he ends up the ultimate example of the backslidden, disobedient Christian. So let us learn from Lot. Let us learn how not to do it from this passage this morning. Well, it's probably useful to set a bit of background, a bit of context here. Verse 1. So Abraham went up from Egypt to the Negev with his wife and everything he had, and Lot went with him. The previous chapter ends with Abraham sinning. In other words, he makes bad choices. He'd been in Egypt because of the famine, but he'd not lived well there and not been a good witness. And so he returns to the land of Canaan where God had first made promises to him. So what do you do when you sin and mess up? You go back to the cross. You go back to square one. You start again. And that is what Abraham did. Verse 3, he went to Bethel, to the place between Bethel and Ai, where his tent had been earlier, and where he had first built an altar. There Abraham called on the name of the Lord. And that verse is exactly the same as you have in chapter 12, verse 8. So that's where he started, that's where he restarted. It's at the altar, the place of sacrifice, the cross, where he sought the Lord. The cross is the place sinful men and women, boys and girls go to meet with God. Only through the cross. Well, Abraham is learning from that mistake. I say he is learning. He repeats it, sadly, in chapter 20, a little bit later. How about you? Do you learn from mistakes? Or are you learning from mistakes? I ask myself. Verse 2, Abraham had become very wealthy in livestock and in silver and gold. And in fact, the word for wealthy there is heavy in the Hebrew. He was rich, he was heavy. And in fact, riches can be a burden, can't they? And those who will be rich load themselves down with burdens. Great possessions as he had make us heavy and unwieldy. There's a burden in getting them. There's fear in keeping them. There's temptation in using them. There's guilt in abusing them. There's sorrow in losing them. And a burden of account at last to be given up concerning them. There is a snare with possessions. Beware. How do you cope with material blessings? The many blessings that the Lord has given us. They're really a bit of a test to us all. Can you live with them without them distracting you and influencing you? Or do they lead you? Promising to enhance your life, you end up serving them and in bondage to them. Well, Abraham had possessions, many of them, and so did Lot, his nephew. They had together become wealthy. Verse 5, now Lot, who was moving along with Abraham, about with Abraham, also had flocks and herds and tents. But the land could not support them while they stayed together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to stay together. And quarrelling arose between Abraham's herdsmen and the herdsmen of Lot. Quarrelling arose. There will be quarrelling. It will happen. And how often it is found within the family. Wherever there's a sinful heart, there will be a tendency to quarrel. Expect it. Quarrelling in the family. But also, as we see here, quarrelling in the nation, because we go on to read, the Canaanites and Perizzites were also living in the land at that time. So Abraham said to Lot, let's not have any quarrelling. Let's not quarrel. We don't want quarrelling between you and me, because and between your husband and mine, because we are brothers. So we as Christians, we should not quarrel. It is a reproach to the Lord. It gives an opening for the devil for us to say things we should not say. The Lord's servants must not quarrel, says Paul to Timothy. Instead, be kind to everyone. We must not quarrel. Instead, we must be peacemakers. That's what Abraham was. The people of God should always be peaceable people. Whatever others are for, we must be for peace. Romans 12 says, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. And as peacemakers, we'll have to be those that take the first move towards peace, not wait for others. And that requires humility. And that's exactly what the Lord Jesus did. He made the first move towards you and I. He humbled himself. If we're going to be peacemakers, not only will we have to humble ourselves and make the first move, we'll have to give up and sacrifice, just as Jesus humbled himself and gave up and sacrificed himself to bring peace, peace with God. That is possible through Jesus' work of humbling and sacrificing himself. And so Abraham does that. He says, look, it's not the whole land before you. Let's part company. So Abraham's answer to this is to separate. Okay, and sometimes separation is the right thing to do. Let's part company. Sometimes we need to part company speedily as well to quench the fire before it breaks out. Separation for safety's sake, separation for the sake of peace. In relationships is often the right course of action. So too at work, I've seen people separated, moved into different offices so that peace would prevail. Notice that Abraham acted. He decided to do something and he acted on it. He didn't just leave it. He didn't think, well, if I do nothing, it'll fix itself. Problems don't fix themselves. They come back even worse. He didn't procrastinate, not make up his mind at all. He did something. So if there's a tension or a situation or a quarreling, now we don't jump into these things, but do you address it or do you let it linger? Or do you react against it? How are you with quarrels that take place? Do you stand your ground and stand on your rights? I have to remind you of something here. The devil is a lawyer, okay? He's very good at finding out when people do things wrong. He's very good at seeing who the lawbreakers are. He'll point it out. He'll tell you to build a case because you'll win it, because that person has broken the law. He's an expert at that. And he'll say, make sure you keep a record. Make sure that you hang on to these things. What the devil hates is grace. The devil hates grace. But Jesus is full of grace, and with him we can have grace. Those that have Jesus display grace. To not show grace, to not show humility, is a sure sign that that person does not know Christ and his salvation. Well, Abraham had decided what he was going to do. As the older, he could have rightly had first choice. And maybe as the richer, he could have said, look, I need land for all my flocks. But he didn't do that. No, he decided that Lot should have first choice. That's an act of grace. What about himself? He entrusted himself to the Lord. I trust you, and I will now give to others. So he said to Lot, if you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left. You choose. I trust him, and I entrust this to the Lord. So there's a little bit about setting the scene, and let's just think about what happened. Verse 10, Lot's choice. There's a responsibility, isn't there, when you have a choice. That's why we have to be careful not to give children too much choice when they're young. There's an onus on us to choose well. And it says, verse 10, Lot looked up and saw the whole plain of the Jordan was well watered, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt towards Zoar. Lot looked and Lot saw. What could he see? Lush, fertile land ahead, a view pleasing to his eye. And then he thought, this is good for me. This will bring me prosperity. But Lot, don't you know that Sodom lies that way? And he did know. He knew about that city. Verse 13 says as well, the men of Sodom were wicked and were sinning greatly against the Lord. And Sodom is the word from which we get sodomy, a byword for perversion and sin. Sodom warns us of ungodliness and God's right anger and judgment against it. So Lot could have said, hang on a moment, let's wait. There could be a snare here. If I go that way, I'll be too close to that wicked city. Could be trouble ahead. I remember years ago seeing a big car pile up in America. Multi-lane expressway coming over a gentle hill. And cars just piled into each other. It's quite a sight to see as I was going the other way. And why did it happen? Weren't looking ahead. Weren't looking ahead. Just ran into the back of the car in front and many of them. In fact, I hear that it takes 100,000 miles for somebody's learning to drive to learn the skill of looking ahead. And most accidents happen because people don't look ahead. So how are Lot's eyes? Can he see clearly? Well, he sees what his eyes wants to see. He doesn't look ahead. He doesn't look at the things the way the Lord looks at things. It's very easy not to do that and not to think biblically, not to think what God has to say about it. Many Christians today don't think biblically, don't spend much time reading his word, and so they look at everything the world's way. There's a lack of wisdom, there's a lack of discernment, and the result is the misery of wrong choices again and again. And it dishonors the Lord, who's given us his word. So Lot was short-sighted. He saw the best before him, and that's as far as he saw. He didn't look ahead. Are you good at looking ahead? When you're making choices, who to marry, boyfriend, girlfriend, friendships, or do you just look on the surface superficially? Beware. What are your eyes looking at? Where are your eyes taking you? Do you love buying things? What is it you look at? Because where we look is where we go. And that's why we have this wonderful little chorus, "Be careful, little eyes, what you see." So truthful. Are you drawn by a good price? You know, you see something a little bit cheaper? That deal is too good to be true? Well, it is too good to be true. I remember years ago going with some others into a bar in central London. The drinks were cheap. Oh, great. So we ordered, and then we found out at the end, at the bottom, it said there's a minimum charge per person. And we ran out with our tail between our legs. Didn't look ahead. Jumped at it. In different ways, we've all been there. Greed blinds me to the catch. I don't want to believe there's a downside. So I just carry on. We said in the Lord's Prayer, didn't we? Lead me not into temptation. So can we say that and then go ahead and lead myself into temptation? And remember, temptation comes from inside me. Each one is tempted when, by his own evil desire, he's dragged away and enticed. So watch out for me. Watch out for each of us in our hearts. Or maybe Lot had another view. Lot may have thought, well, I know what's ahead. I know what the city's like, but I can handle it. I'm okay. I'm strong enough. I'm not going to fall for temptation there. I can manage. I can cope. Well, to him and to us come the words, "Let him who is standing firm beware, lest he fall." So here is a man who does not know himself. He does not know his weaknesses. Led by his greed, Lot starts his fatal action, verse 11. So Lot, we see the motive there, chose for himself. He chose for himself the whole plain of the Jordan and set out towards the east. Lot lived among the chief cities of the plain and pitched his tents near Sodom. Well, let's think about the consequences of that, shall we? Can you see the progression there? Perhaps you know the passages in the Bible in Genesis, but he pitched his tent near Sodom, and then what happens? He's gradually drawn, chapter 14, verse 12. He's living in Sodom. Sin, falling away from the Lord, comes bit by bit. If he's not resisted and bad choices are continued to be made, the point comes, like that famous kind of lobster in the pot, it's too late to go back, isn't it? 14:12, he's in the city. 19:1, he's sitting in the gateway of the city. And what does that mean? Well, he's become part of the establishment. And he'd become one of the city elders, and that's what they did. That was their custom. They presided at the city gate. So what has happened? He'd become embedded in the social fabric of that city. So one godless decision had led to another and another and another. And then he'd found a wife from that city. And we see when she was being rescued, she looked back, didn't she? Her heart was really in that city. Beware, bad company corrupts good character. She couldn't take away his salvation, but she took away his walk with the Lord. She took away his witness. Those early decisions bore their ugly fruit. So if you find yourself in that situation, come quickly to the Lord and seek forgiveness and his help. David did that when he sinned with Bathsheba. He was involved, before that, he was involved with the Lord's work and his life was full of victory. Then he became idle and was led into sin. And the rest of his life was beset with trouble. After Bathsheba, that incident there, there was trouble and strife often from within his own family. You can split 2 Samuel right down the middle. Before Bathsheba, things are going well. After Bathsheba, trouble, trouble, trouble. David sought forgiveness very quickly and he had it. But the consequences continued. So feeling that slippery slope towards sin, usually go your way in the decisions that you make. Well, let's take some advice from Charles Spurgeon. He says this: whatever the setting you're in, when you fall, avoid them. Avoid the setting. What props do you have that support your sin? Eliminate them. What people are you usually with? Avoid them. There are 2 equally damning lies Satan wants you to believe. 1, just once won't hurt. 2, now that you've ruined your life, you're beyond God's use. You may as well enjoy your sinning. And he says, learn to say no. So it's interesting, isn't it, that Lot went from bad to worse. And I wonder if when he was with Abraham, he was restrained by that godly man. Abraham had plenty of property, but he knew how to cope with it. But when he was away from Abraham, he slipped. Or maybe Lot, with his covetousness and his greed, stuck with Abraham because Abraham didn't have any heirs. And he thought, maybe I can inherit all of this. But when he was away from Abraham, his true character came out. So Lot, and we'll finish with this, is the example of a compromised Christian. Lot did escape God's judgment against Sodom as it went up in flames. You can read about that. But then there's a parallel passage in the New Testament. Paul alludes to that in 1 Corinthians 3. Here is someone who did not build his life well. We think about that earlier. And he escapes the flames. He's saved, for it is the Lord who saves. It is to his honour to save. But he only just made it. He crawled into heaven like a coward with no reward. Why? Because he made foolish choices. He did not build his life well. He chose the wrong materials. Instead of the way of holiness, he chose the way of the world. So I said we'd learn from Lot. How can we summarise his life? Well, he chose the material over the spiritual. There's one issue there. He also gave up his relationship with Abraham for self-advancement. He looked short-term instead of long-term. He didn't have eyes to see in the future. And that was a long-term cost, a very severe one at that. He did a kind of buy now, pay later, really, in his life. He mortgaged his life for later. And I look back on my parents' divorce and I think if my father had considered the consequences, I think he would have thought again. I don't know. But we're all making decisions. Even the small ones can have large effect. I know some who used to read the Bible regularly, but bit by bit, it's just fallen away. Where will that leave them? We're constantly making decisions, aren't we? Every new morning, we wake up and we think, what about the day ahead? What will you do with your day? Will you do something to serve the Lord and his people? Or will you make your own plans that centre around what you do? And the more you choose the latter, the less you'll be wanting to do the former. And if you profess to be a follower of Jesus, is that fulfilling your pledge to him? Is he pleased with that? Well, Abraham, who'd made good choices, kind of the Lord catches up with him and speaks to him, verse 14. The Lord said to Abraham after Lot had parted from him, lift up your eyes from where you are and look north and south, east and west. So the Lord is saying to Abraham, look, you've trusted me, and the one who trusts me will never lose his reward. just as Lot looked and saw. Abraham is told to do the same thing, isn't he? He's told to look and see. Lift up your eyes from where you are and look. Everything he's in front of him, he's going to have. So the Lord is no man's debtor. If we go his way, we trust him, he will always provide and more. Do you remember Hannah prayed for a child and Samuel came? The Lord is the God of grace. She had six children in the end. Not just one. She prayed for one. She ended up with six. All the land you see, I will give to you and your offspring. So Abraham will always remain in what the Bible calls the land of the living, which is the life of God with Jesus. And not only Abraham, but his descendants. He didn't have any, did he? To childless Abraham, the sign of everlasting prosperity, verse 16, I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth, so that if anyone could count the dust, then your offspring could be counted. Go, walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I am giving it to you. So Abraham moved his tents and went to live near the great trees of Mamre at Hebron, where he built an altar to the Lord. He's saying, thank you, Lord, thank you, thank you. So in conclusion, have you messed up? I have. Come back to the Lord. Seek him quickly. Say, from now onwards, not my will, but yours be done. Pray with David. Lord, renew a right spirit within me. One of the things I've been learning in the last couple of years particularly is that there's really only one way to live, and that is in the Lord's will, not out of it. It's in the Lord's will. That's where you find him. That's where you dwell with him. That's where you receive from him. And that's why repentance is so important, because it takes my will to be his will. And that's where I need to live. And maybe there are some here who are not close to the Lord because there's someone in the way, yourself, unwilling to turn your will to his will. If you're not willing to give it up, then you will remain away from him. So it was with Lot. But we're going to go Abraham's way, aren't we? The man of faith who's learning to live by faith. And that means in everything, in all the decisions, we go his way. We go his way. Will you do that? Will you entrust everything to him? Seek him first. Read his word. Have the counsel of others. Make wise decisions and build well. May the Lord help us with that as we sing our last hymn, because the Lord is a great shepherd to his people. And we're going to sing the new version of The Lord My Shepherd. And the chorus line says, and I will trust in you alone. And I will trust in you alone. So 1008.